bald eagle perched on a telephone pole, watching her, its golden eyes bright in the gloom. Forcing herself to move, she went into the building, spoke to the receptionist, and followed her instructions down to the room at the end of the hall. There, at the closed door, she paused, took a steady breath, and opened the door. Mr. Walker stood by the bed. At Lenny's entrance, he turned. He didn't look like himself. The months had whittled him away, his sweater and jeans bagged. He had grown a beard that was half gray.
Hi, Lenny.
Hey, she said, her gaze cutting to the bed. Matthew lay strapped down. There was a cage-like thing around his bald head. It was bolted in with screws. They drilled into his skull. He looked thin and scrawny and old, like a plucked bird. For the first time, she saw his face, crisscrossed by red zipper scars. A pucker of folded skin pulled one corner of his eye downward. His nose was flattened. He lay motionless, his eyes open, his mouth slack. A line of drool beaded down from his full lower lip. Lenny went to the bed, stood beside Mr. Walker.
I thought he was better.
He is better. Sometimes I swear he looks right at me.
Lenny leaned down.
Hey, Matthew.
Matthew moaned, bellowed, words that weren't words, just ape-like sounds and grunts. Lenny drew back. He sounded angry. Mr. Walker placed his hand on Matthew's.
It's Lenny, Matthew. You know Lenny.
Matthew screamed. It was a heart-rending sound that reminded her of an animal caught in a trap. His right eye rolled around in the socket.
Woof!
Lenny gaped down at him. This wasn't better. This wasn't Matthew, not this screaming, moaning husk of a person.
Blah!
Matthew moaned, his body buckling. A terrible smell followed. Mr. Walker took Lenny by the arm, led her out of the room.
Susanna, Tom said to the nurse. He needs a diaper change.
Lenny would have collapsed if not for Mr. Walker, who held her up. He led her over to a waiting area with vending machines and eased her into a chair. He sat in the chair beside her.
Don't worry about the screaming. He does it all the time. The doctors say it's purely physical, but I think it's frustration. He's in there, somewhere, and he is in pain. It's killing me to see him like this and not be able to help.
I could marry him, take care of him, Lenny said. In her dreams, she'd imagined it, being married, her caring for him, her love bringing him back.
That's a really nice thing, Lenny, and it tells me Matthew loves the right girl, but he may never get out of that bed, or be able to say I do.
But people get married, people who are injured and can't talk and are dying, don't they?
Not 18-year-old girls with their whole lives in front of them. How's your mom? I hear she took your dad back.
She always takes him back. They're like magnets.
We're all worried about you two.
Yeah.
Lenny sighed. What good had worry ever done? Only Mama could change their situation, and she refused to do it. In the silence that followed that unanswerable comment, Mr. Walker reached into his pocket and pulled out a thin package wrapped in newsprint. Written across the top in red marker was, Happy Birthday, Lenny.
Alyeska found this in Maddie's room. I guess he got it for you before.
Oh,
was all she could say. Her birthday had been forgotten in all the drama this year. She took the gift, stared down at it. The nurse exited Matthew's room. Through the open door, Lenny heard Matthew screaming.
Oh! No! Sure! The brain damage. It's bad, kiddo. I won't lie to you. I was sorry to hear you decided not to go to college.
She shoved the present in her parka pocket.
How could I? It was supposed to be both of us.
He'd want you to go. You know he would.
We don't know what he wants anymore, do we? She got up, went back into Matthew's room. He lay rigid, his fingers flexed. The bolts in his head and scars on his face gave him a Frankenstein appearance. His one good eye stared dully ahead, not at her. She leaned over and picked up his hand. It was a dead weight. She kissed the back of it, saying, "I love you." He didn't respond. "I'm not going anywhere," she promised in a thick voice. "I'll always be here. This is me, Matthew, climbing down to save you, like you did for me. You did it, you know. You saved me. I'm standing here, by the one I love. I hope you hear that." She stayed by him for hours. Every now and then he screamed and struggled. Twice he cried. Finally, they asked her to leave so they could bathe him. It wasn't until later, after she'd flagged down the water taxi and climbed aboard, as she was listening to the boat hull thumping over the whitecaps with water spraying her in the face, that she realized she hadn't said goodbye to Mr. Walker. She'd just walked through the care facility and gone outside, past a man standing in front of a shack held together with duct tape and plastic sheeting, past a group of kids playing foursquare in the school playground, wearing Arctic camo clothes, past an old native woman walking two huskies and a duck, all on leashes. She thought she had grieved for Matthew, cried all the tears she had, but now she saw the desert of grief that lay before her. It could go on and on. The human body was 80% water. That meant she was literally made of tears. In Connick, as she walked off the water taxi, it started to snow. The town gave off a slight humming, the sound of the big generator that fueled the new lights. Snow fell like sifting flour in the glow of Mr. Walker's new street lamps. She barely noticed the cold as she walked up to the general store. The bell rang at her entrance. It was 4:30, technically still daytime, but night was coming in fast. Large Marge was dressed in a thigh-length fringed suede jacket over insulated pants. Her hair looked like shavings from an etch-a-sketch that had been glued to her skull. In places she had no hair at all, patches where she'd cut too zealously down to her brown scalp, probably because she didn't own a mirror.
"Lenny, what a nice surprise," she said in a foghorn voice that would have sent birds into the air. "I miss my best ever employee."
Lenny saw compassion in the woman's dark eyes. She meant to say, "I saw Matthew," but to her horror, what she did was burst into tears. Large Marge led Lenny over to the cash register, eased her to a sitting position on the old-fashioned settee, and handed her a tab.
"I just saw Matthew," Lenny said, slumping forward.
Large Marge sat down beside her. The settee creaked angrily.
"Yeah, I was in Anchorage last week. It's hard to see. It's killing Tom and Allie, too. How much heartache can one family handle?"
"I thought a care facility meant he was better. I thought..."
She sighed.
"I don't know what I thought."
"He's as good as he's going to get, from what I hear. Poor kid."
"He was trying to save me."
Large Marge was quiet for a moment. In the silence, Lenny wondered if one person could ever really save another, or if it was the kind of thing you had to do for yourself.
"How's your mom? I still can't believe she let Ernst come back."
"Yeah, the cops can't do anything if she won't."
Lenny didn't know what else to say. She knew it was impossible for someone like Large Marge to understand why a woman like Cora stayed with a man like Ernst. It should have been as easy as an elementary math equation. He hits you, times broken bones, equals leave him.
"Tom and I begged your mama to press charges. I guess she's too afraid."
"It's about more than fear."
Lenny was about to say more when her stomach seized. She thought she might throw up.
"Sorry," she said when the nausea passed. "I feel terrible lately. Worry is making me physically sick, I guess."
Large Marge sat there a long time, then pushed to her feet.
"Wait here."
She left Lenny sitting on the settee,
breathing carefully. She walked back toward the store's shelving, bumping into one of the steel animal traps hanging on the wall. Lenny kept reliving the scene with Matthew, hearing his screams, seeing his eye roll around the socket. He needs a diaper change. Her fault. All of it. Large Marge returned, her rubber boots squeaking on the sawdust floor.
You might need this, I'm afraid. I always keep one in stock.
Lenny looked down, saw the slim box in Large Marge's palm. And just like that, Lenny's life got even worse. In the dark of an early fallen night, Lenny made her way from the outhouse to the cabin beneath a starlit velvet blue sky. It was one of those vibrant, clear-skied Alaskan nights that were otherworldly. Moonlight reflected on snow and set the world aglow. Once inside the cabin, she latched the door behind her and stood by the row of parkas and Cowichan sweaters and rain jackets, the box of mittens and gloves and hats at her feet, unable to move, to think, to feel. Until now, this second, she would have said blue was her favorite color. A stupid thought, but there it was. Blue, the color of morning, of twilight, of glaciers and rivers, of Kachemak Bay, of her mother's eyes. Now, blue was the color of a ruined life. She didn't know what to do. There was no good answer. She was smart enough to know that. And dumb enough to be in this situation. Lenny? She heard her mother's voice, recognized the concerned tone, but it didn't matter. Lenny felt distance spreading between them. That was how change came, she supposed, in the quiet of things unspoken and truths unacknowledged. How was Matthew? Mama asked. She walked over to Lenny, peeled off Lenny's parka, hung it up, and led her to the sofa, but neither of them sat down. He's not even him, Lenny said. He can't think or talk or walk. He didn't look at me, just screamed. He's not paralyzed, though. That's good, right? That was what Lenny had thought, too, before. But what good was being able to move if you couldn't think or see or talk? It might have been better if he'd died down there, kinder. But the world was never kind, especially not to kids. I know you think it's the end of the world, but you're young. You'll fall in love again, and what's that in your hand? Lenny held out her fist, uncurled her fingers to reveal the thin vial in her hand. Mama took it, studied it. What is this? It's a pregnancy test, Lenny said. Blue means positive. She thought about the chain of choices that had led her here. A 10-degree shift anywhere along the way, and everything would be different. It must have happened the night we ran away. Or before? How do you know a thing like that? Oh, Lenny, Mama said. What Lenny needed now was Matthew. She needed him to be him, whole. Then they would be in this together. If Matthew were Matthew, they'd get married and have a baby. It was 1978, for God's sake. Maybe they didn't even have to get married. The point was, they could make it. They'd be too young, and college would have to wait, but it wouldn't be the tragedy it was now. How was she supposed to do this without him? Mama said, "It's not like in my day when they sent you away in shame and nuns took your baby. You have choices now. It's legal to..." I'm having Matthew's baby, Lenny said. She didn't even know until then that all of this had already gone through her brain and she'd decided. You can't raise a baby alone, here. You mean with Dad, Lenny said. And there it was, the thing that made this even worse. Lenny was carrying a walker baby. Her father would blow a gasket when he found out. I don't want him anywhere near this baby, Lenny said. Mama pulled Lenny into her arms, held her tightly. We will figure this out, Mama said, stroking her hair. Lenny could tell that her mother was crying, and that made her feel even worse.
What's this?
Dad said, his voice booming loud. Mama sprang back, looking guilty. Her cheeks shone with tears, her smile was unsteady.
Ernst, Mama said. You're back.
Lenny shoved the vial into her pocket. Dad stood by the door, unzipped his insulated coveralls.
How is the kid? Still a vegetable.
Lenny had never felt such hatred. She pushed Mama aside and went to him, saw his surprise as she neared him and said, I'm pregnant. She never saw the hit coming. One minute she was standing there, staring at her father, and the next minute his fist hit her chin so hard she tasted blood. Her head snapped back, she stumbled, lost her balance, crashed into an end table, and fell to the floor. As she landed, she thought, oddly, he's so fast.
Ernst, no!
Mama screamed. Dad unbuckled his belt, pulled it loose, came at Lenny. She tried to get up, but her head was ringing, and she was dizzy. Her vision was off. The first crack of his belt buckle hit her across the cheek, breaking the skin. Lenny cried out, tried to scuttle away. He hit her again. Mama threw herself at Dad, clawing at his face. He shoved her away and went after Lenny again. He yanked her to her feet, backhanded her across the face. She heard the cartilage crack, pop. Blood gushed from her nose. She staggered back, instinctively protecting her stomach as she fell to her knees. A gun fired. Lenny heard the loud crack and smelled the shot. Glass shattered. Dad stood there, his legs braced wide, his right hand still curled into a fist. For a second, nothing happened. No one moved. Then Dad stumbled forward toward Lenny. Blood pulsed from a wound in his chest, stained his shirt. He looked confused, surprised.
Cora,
he said, turning to look up at her. Mama stood behind him, the gun still pointed at him.
Not Lenny, she said, her voice steady. Not my Lenny.
She shot him again. 24.
He's dead, Lenny said.
Not that there was much doubt. The gun Mama had chosen could kill a bull moose. Lenny realized she was kneeling in a pool of gore. Bits of bone and cartilage looked like maggots in the blood. Ice-cold air swept into the room through the broken window. Mama dropped the weapon. She moved toward Dad, her eyes wide, her mouth trembling. She scratched nervously at her throat, turned the pale skin red in streaks. Lenny climbed woodenly to her feet and walked into the kitchen. She ought to be thinking, we're fine, he's gone. But she felt nothing, not even relief. Her face hurt so much it made her sick to her stomach. The taste of blood was making her gag, and with every breath her nose made a whistling sound. She got a rag wet and pressed it to her face, wiped blood away. How had Mama endured this pain over and over? She rinsed the rag, twisted out the pink water of her blood, and dampened it again, then returned to the living room, which smelled of gun smoke and gore and blood. Mama knelt on the floor. She'd pulled Dad into her lap and was rocking him back and forth, crying. There was blood everywhere, on her hands, her knees. She'd smeared it across her eyes.
Mama.
Lenny leaned down, touched her mother's shoulder. Her mother looked up, blinking groggily.
I didn't know how else to stop him.
What do we do?
Lenny said.
Get on the ham radio. Call the police.
Her mother said in a lifeless voice. The police. Finally, after all these years, they would get some help.
We will be okay, Mama. You'll see. No, we won't, Lenny.
Lenny wiped blood from her mother's face, just as she'd done so often before. Mama didn't even flinch.
What do you mean? They'll call it murder.
Murder? But he was beating us. You saved my life.
I shot him in the back, Lenny. Twice. Juries and defense attorneys don't like people shot in the back. It's fine. I don't care.
She pushed the hair out of her face, left bloody streaks.
Go tell Large Marge. She's a lawyer, or was. She'll handle it.
Mama sounded drugged. Her speech was slow.
You'll have your fresh start. You'll raise your baby here in Alaska, among our friends. Tom will be like a father to you, I know it. And Large Marge adores you. Maybe college is still a possibility.
She looked at Lenny.
It was worth it. I want you to know that. I'd do it again for you. Wait, are you talking about leaving me? About prison? Just go get Large Marge. You are not going to prison for killing a man that everyone in town knew was abusive. I don't care. You're safe. That's all that matters. What if we get rid of him?
Mama blinked.
Get rid of him? We could make it so this never happened.
Lenny got to her feet. Yes, this was the answer. They would devise a way to erase what they'd done. Then they could stay here, she and Mama, and live among their friends in this place they'd grown to love. The baby would be loved by all of them, and when Matthew finally got better, Lenny would be waiting.
That's not as easy as it sounds, Lenny,
Mama said.
This is Alaska. Nothing is easy, but we're tough, and if you go to prison, I'll be alone, with a baby to raise. I can't do it without you. I need you, Mama.
It was a moment before Mama said,
We'd need to hide the body. Make sure it never gets found. The ground is too frozen to bury him. Right.
But Lenny, she said evenly,
you're talking about another crime.
Letting you be called a murderer, that would be a crime. You think I'm going to trust the law with your life? The law? You told me the law didn't protect abused women, and you were right. He got out of jail in a few days. When did the law ever protect you from him? No, no!
Are you sure, Lenny? It means you'll have to live with it.
I can live with it. I'm sure. Mama took a while to consider, then extracted herself from Dad's limp, bloody body and stood. She went into her bedroom and came out a few moments later dressed in insulated pants and a turtleneck. She dumped her bloody clothes in a heap by Dad's body.
I'll be back as soon as I can. Don't open the door to anyone except me.
What do you mean?
Step one is to dispose of the body.
And you think I'm going to sit here while you do it?
I killed him. I'll do this. And I'm helping you cover it up. We don't have time to argue.
Exactly. Lenny stripped out of her bloody clothes. Within moments, she was in her insulated pants and parka and bunny boots, ready to go.
Get his traps,
Mama said, and left the cabin. Lenny gathered the heavy traps from their hooks on the cabin wall and carried them outside. Mama had already hooked the big red plastic sled to the snow machine. It was the one Dad had used for hauling wood. It could hold two large coolers, a lot of chopped wood, and a moose carcass.
Lay the traps in the sled, then go get the chainsaw and the auger.
When Lenny returned with the tools, Mama said,
You ready for the next part?
Lenny nodded.
Let's go get him.
It took them 30 minutes to drag Dad's lifeless body from the cabin and across the snowy deck, and then another 10 minutes to get him settled on the sled. A bloody trail in the snow revealed their path, but within the hour, with snow falling this heavily, it would be gone. Come spring, the rains would wash it away. Mama covered Dad with a tarp and lashed him and it down with bungee cords.
Okay, then.
Lenny and her mother exchanged a look. In it was the truth that this act, this decision, would change them forever. Without words, Mama gave Lenny the chance to change her mind. Lenny stood firm. She was in this. They would dispose of the body, clean the cabin, and tell everyone he left them. Say he must have fallen through the ice while hunting or lost his way in the snow. No one would question or care. Everyone knew there were 1,000 ways to disappear up here. Lenny and her mama would finally, finally be unafraid.
Okay, then.
Mama pulled the cord to start the snow machine, then took her place on the two-person seat and grasped the throttle. She fitted a neoprene face mask over her bruised, swelling face and gingerly pulled on her helmet. Lenny did the same.
This is going to be cold as hell, Mama yelled over the roar of the engine. We're going up the mountain.
Lenny climbed aboard, put her arms around her mother's waist. Mama revved the engine, and they were off, driving through the virgin snow, through the open gates. They turned right on the main road and left onto the road that led up to the old chromium mine. By then, it was deep night and blowing snow and cold. The thread of yellow from the snow machine's headlight led the way. In weather like this, they didn't need to worry much about being seen. For more than 2 hours, Mama drove high up in the mountain. Where the snow was deep, her touch on the throttle was light. They rode up hills, down valleys, across frozen rivers, and around cliffs of soaring rock. Mama kept the snow machine's speed so low it was barely faster than walking. Speed wasn't their objective now. Invisibility was, and the sled needed to stay steady. They came at last to a small lake high on the mountain, ringed by tall trees and granite cliffs. Sometime in the last hour, the snow had stopped falling, and the clouds had departed to reveal a velvety blue night sky awash in swirls of starlight. The moon came out, as if to watch two women in the midst of all this snow and ice, or to mourn their choices. Full and bright, it shone down on them, its light reflected across the snow, seeming to lift skyward, a radiant glow illuminating the snowy landscape. In the sudden clarity of the night, they were visible now, two women on a snow machine in a glowing silver-white world with a dead body on a sled. At the frozen lakeshore, Mama eased off of the gas, came to a trembling stop. The insect drone of the engine was the loudest noise out here. It drowned out the harsh sound of Lenny's breathing through the neoprene face mask and helmet. Was the lake fully frozen? There was no way to know for sure. It should be, at this high elevation, but it was early too, not midwinter. The snow radiated with moonlight across the flat, frozen lake. Lenny tightened her hold. Mama barely turned the throttle, then inched forward. In this dark, they were like astronauts, moving through a strange, impossibly illuminated world, like deepest space, the sound of cracking ice all around them. In the center of the lake, Mama killed the engine. The snow machine slid to a stop. Mama dismounted. The cracking sound was loud, insistent, but not the kind of sound that mattered. It was just the ice breathing, stretching, not breaking. Mama took off her helmet, hung it on the throttle, and removed her face mask. Her breath shot out in humid plumes. Lenny set her helmet on the duct-taped vinyl seat. In the silver, blue, white light of the moon, ice crystals sparkled across the surface of the snow, glittering like gemstones. Quiet. Only their breathing. Together, they pulled Dad's body off the sled. Lenny used the emergency shovel to clear a divot in the snow. When she came to the glassy silver ice, she put her shovel away and retrieved the auger and the chainsaw. Mama used the auger to drill an 8-inch hole in the ice. Slushy water seeped up, bounced the round disc of ice. Lenny pulled off her face mask and shoved it in her pocket, then started up the chainsaw. The wah-na-na-na, excruciatingly loud out here. She pointed the blade downward, stuck it in the hole, and began the long, arduous process of turning the hole into a big square opening in the ice. When Lenny finished, she was sweating hard. Mama dropped the animal traps beside the hole. They landed with a clank. Then Mama went back for Dad. Grabbing hold of his cold, white hands, she dragged him over to the hole, tucked him up close to it. Dad's body was stiff and still, his face as white and hard as a tusk carving. For the first time, Lenny really thought about what they were doing, the bad thing they'd done. From now on, they would have to live with the knowledge that they were capable of this, all of it. The shooting, the carrying of a dead man, the covering up of a crime. Although they'd had a lifetime of covering up for him, looking away, pretending, this was different. Now they were the criminals, and the secret Lenny had to protect was her own. A good person would feel ashamed. Instead, she was angry, howlingly so. If only they had walked away years ago, or called the police, asked for help. Any small course correction on Mama's part might have led to a future where there wasn't a dead man on the ice between them. Mama dragged the traps apart, forced the black jaws open. She pushed Dad's forearm into the maw. The trap closed with a snap of breaking bone. Mama paled, looking sick. Traps broke both of Dad's legs. Snap became weights. The northern lights appeared overhead, cascading in swirls of yellow, green, red, and purple. Impossible, magical color. Lights fell like silken scarves across the sky, skeins of yellow, neon green, shocking pink. The electric bright moon seemed to watch it all. Lenny stared down at her father. She saw the man who had used his fists when he was angry, saw the blood on his hands and the mean set to his jaw. But she saw the other man, too, one she'd crafted from photographs and her own need, the one who loved them as much as he could, his capacity for love destroyed by war. Lenny thought maybe that he would haunt her. Not just him, but the idea of him, the sad and scary truth that you could love and hate the same person at the same time, that you could feel a deep and abiding loss and shame for your own weakness, and still be glad that this awful thing had been done. Mama dropped to her knees beside him, bent close.
We loved you.
She looked up at Lenny, wanting, maybe needing, Lenny to say the same thing, to do what Lenny had always done, peas in a pod. It was between them now, years of yelling and hitting, of being afraid, and smiles and laughter, Dad saying, "Hey, you're red," and begging for forgiveness. "Bye, Dad," was all Lenny could summon. Maybe in time this wouldn't be her last memory of him. Maybe in time she would remember how it felt when he held her hand or put her on his shoulders as he walked along the strand. Mama pushed him across the ice, traps clanking, into the open hole. His body plunged down, snapping his head back. His face peered up at them, a cameo in cold black water, skin white in the moonlight, beard and mustache frozen. Slowly, slowly, he sank into the water and disappeared. There would be no trace of him tomorrow. The ice would close up long before anyone else came out here. His body would freeze solid and be dragged by the heavy traps to the lake floor. In time, he would thaw and be worn away by the water and become only bones, and bones could wash ashore, but the predators would likely find them before the authorities would. By then, no one would be looking anyway. 5 out of every 1,000 people went missing in Alaska every year were lost. That was a known fact. They fell down crevasses, lost their way on trails, drowned in a rising tide. Alaska, the great alone.
You know what this makes us, Mama said.
Lenny stood beside her, imagining the sight of her dad's pale, stiff body being dragged down into the dark, the thing he hated most.
Survivors, Lenny said.
The irony was not lost on her. It was what her dad had wanted them to be. Survivors. Lenny kept replaying it in her mind, seeing the last glimpse of her dad's face before the black water pulled him under. The image would haunt her for the rest of her life. When they finally returned to the cabin, exhausted and cold to the bone, Lenny and her mother had to haul in wood to feed the fire. Lenny tossed her gloves into the flames. Then she and Mama stood in front of the fire, their trembling hands outstretched to the heat. For how long? Who knew? Time lost its meaning. Lenny stared numbly down at the floor. There was a bone shard near her foot, another on the coffee table. It would take all night to clean this up, and she feared that even if they wiped all his blood away, it would come seeping back, bubbling up from the wood like something out of a horror story. But they had to get started.
We need to clean up. We'll say he disappeared, Lenny said.
Mama frowned, chewed worriedly at her lower lip.
Go get Large Marge. Tell her what I did.
Mama looked at Lenny.
You hear me? Tell her what I did.
Lenny nodded and left Mama alone to start cleaning. Outside, it was snowing lightly again, the world darker, layered with clouds. Lenny trudged to the snow machine and climbed aboard.
Airy goose down flakes fell, changed direction with the wind. At Large Marge's property, Lenny veered right, plunged into a thicket of trees, drove along a winding path of tire tracks on snow. At last she came to a clearing, small, oval-shaped, ringed by towering white trees. Large Marge's home was a canvas and wood yurt. Like all homesteaders, Large Marge kept everything, so her yard was full of heaps and piles of junk covered in snow. Lenny parked in front of the yurt and got out. She knew she didn't have to yell out a greeting. The headlight and sound of the snow machine had announced her. Sure enough, a minute later, the door to the yurt opened. Large Marge walked out, wearing a woolen blanket like a huge cape around her body. She tented a hand over her eyes to keep out the falling snow.
Lenny? Is that you?
It's me.
Come in! Come in!
Large Marge said, making a sweeping gesture with her hand. Lenny hurried up the steps and went inside. The yurt was bigger inside than it looked from the outside, and immaculately clean. Lanterns gave off a buttery light, and the wood stove poured out heat and sent its smoke up through a metal pipe that protruded through a carefully constructed opening at the yurt's canvas crown. The walls were constructed of thin wooden strips in an intricate crisscross pattern, with canvas stretched taut behind them like an elaborate hoop skirt. The domed ceiling was buttressed by beams. The kitchen was full-sized, and the bedroom was above, in a loft area that looked down over the living area. Now, in the winter, it was cozy and contained, but in the summer, she knew that the canvas windows were unzipped to reveal screens that let in huge blocks of light. Wind thumped on the canvas. Large Marge took one look at Lenny's bruised face and squashed nose, at the dried blood on her cheeks, and said,
"Son of a bitch."
She pulled Lenny into a fierce hug, held on to her.
"It was bad tonight,"
Lenny said at last, pulling away. She was shaking. Maybe it was finally sinking in. They'd killed him, broken his bones, dropped him in the water.
"Is Cora?"
"He's dead,"
Lenny said quietly.
"Thank God," Large Marge said.
"Mama,
don't tell me anything. Where is he?"
"Gone."
"And Cora?"
"At the cabin. You said you'd help us. I guess we need it now to, you know, clean up. But I don't want to get you in trouble."
"Don't worry about me. Go home. I'll be there in 10 minutes.
Large Marge was already changing her clothes when Lenny left the yurt. Back at the cabin, she found Mama standing away from the pool of blood and gore, staring down at it, her face ravaged by tears, chewing on her torn thumbnail.
"Mama,"
Lenny said, almost afraid to touch her.
"She'll help us?"
Before Lenny could answer, she saw a spear of light flash across the window, tarnishing it, casting Mama in brightness. Lenny saw her mother's sorrow and regret in sharp relief. Large Marge pushed open the cabin door, walked inside. Dressed in Carhartt insulated coveralls and her Wolverine hat and knee-high mucklucks, she took a quick look around, saw the blood and gore and bits of bone. She went to Mama, touched her gently on the shoulder.
"He went after Lenny,"
Mama said.
"I had to shoot him, but I shot him in the back, Marge, twice. He was unarmed. You know what that means."
Large Marge sighed.
"Yeah, they don't give a shit what a man does or how scared you are."
"We weighed him down and dropped him in the lake, but you know how things get found in Alaska? All kinds of things bubble up from the ground during breakup."
Large Marge nodded.
"They'll never find him," Lenny said. "We'll say he ran away."
Large Marge said,
"Lenny, go upstairs and pack a small bag, just enough for overnight."
"I can help with cleaning," Lenny said.
"Go," Large Marge said sternly.
Lenny climbed up into the loft. Behind her, she heard Mama and Large Marge talking quietly. Lenny chose the book of Robert Service poetry to take with her for tonight. She also took the photograph album Matthew had given her, full now of her favorite pictures. She pushed them deep into her pack, alongside her beloved camera, and covered it all with a few clothes, and then went downstairs.
Mama was wearing Dad's snow boots as she walked through the pool of blood, making tracks to the door. At the windowsill, she pressed a bloody hand to the glass.
"What are you doing?" Lenny asked.
"Making sure the authorities know your mom and Dad were here,"
Large Marge answered. Mama took off Dad's boots and changed into her own and made more tracks in the blood. Then Mama took one of her shirts and ripped it and dropped it onto the floor.
"Oh," Lenny said.
"This way they'll know it's a crime scene," Large Marge said.
"But we're going to clean it all up," Lenny said.
"No, baby girl. We have to disappear," Mama said. "Now, tonight."
"Wait," Lenny said.
"What? We're going to say he left us. People will believe it."
Large Marge and Mama exchanged a sad look.
"People go missing in Alaska all the time," Lenny said, her voice spiking up.
"I thought you understood," Mama said. "We can't stay in Alaska after this."
"What?"
"We can't stay," Mama said, gently but firmly. "Large Marge agrees. Even if we could have argued self-defense, we can't now. We've covered up the crime."
"Evidence of intent," Large Marge said. "There is no defense for battered women who kill their husbands. There sure as hell should be. You could assert defense of others and it might fly. You might be acquitted if the jury thinks deadly force was reasonable. But do you really want to take that chance? The law isn't good to victims of domestic abuse."
Mama nodded.
"Marge will leave the truck parked out on some dead-end road with blood smeared across the cab. In a few days, she will report us missing and lead the police to the cabin. They'll conclude, hopefully, that he killed us both and went into hiding. Marge and Tom will tell the police that he was abusive."
"Your mom and Dad share the same blood type," Large Marge said. "There's no conclusive test that can identify whose blood this is. At least, I hope there isn't."
"I want to say he ran off," Lenny said stubbornly.
"I mean it, Mama. Please. Matthew is here."
"Even in the bush, they'll investigate a local man who disappears, Lenny," Large Marge said. "Remember how everyone came together to look for Geneva Walker? The first place they'll look is the cabin. And what will you say about the shot-out window? I know Kurt Ward. He's a by-the-book cop. He might even bring in a dog or call an investigator from Anchorage. No matter how well we clean, there could be evidence here. A human bone fragment, something to identify your father. If they find it, they'll arrest you both for murder."
Mama went to Lenny.
"I'm sorry, baby girl, but you wanted this. I was willing to take the blame alone, but you wouldn't let me. We're in it together now."
Lenny felt as if she were free-falling. In her naivete, she'd thought they could do this terrible thing and pay no price beyond the shadowing of their souls, the memories and nightmares. But it would cost Lenny everything she loved. Matthew, Connick, Alaska.
"Lenny, we don't have a choice now."
"When have we ever had a choice?"
Lenny said. Lenny wanted to scream and cry and be the child it felt she'd never been, but if her youth and her family had taught her anything, it was how to survive. Mama was right. There was no way they could clean up this blood, and dogs and police would sniff out the crime. What if Dad had an appointment tomorrow they didn't know about and someone called the police to report him missing before they were ready? What if his body slipped free of the shackles and floated to the shore when the water thawed and a hunter found him? As always, Lenny had to think about the people she loved. Mama had taken every hit to protect Lenny, and she'd shot Dad to save Lenny. She couldn't leave Mama alone now, on the run, and Lenny couldn't raise her baby alone either. She felt an overwhelming sadness, a suffocating sense of having run a marathon, only to end up in the same place. At least they would be together, the two of them, like always, and the baby would have a chance at something better.
"Okay," she turned to Large Marge. "What do we do?"
The next hour was spent on final details. They parked the truck at the harbor, with blood smeared across the door handle. They knocked over furniture and left out an empty whiskey bottle, and Large Marge shot twice into the log walls. They left the cabin door open for animals to enter and further ruin any evidence.
"Are you ready?"
Mama asked at last. Lenny wanted to say, "No, I'm not ready. I belong here." But it was too late to salvage before. She nodded grimly. Large Marge hugged them both tightly, kissed their wet cheeks, told them to have a good life.
"I'll report you missing," she whispered in Lenny's ear. "I'll never tell a living soul about this. You can trust me."
By the time Lenny and Mama walked down their zigzagged beach steps for the last time in a blinding snowfall, Lenny felt like she was 1,000 years old. She followed her mother down onto the snowy, slushy beach. Wind whipped hair across Mama's eyes, tore the volume from her voice, rattled the pack on her back. Lenny could tell Mama was talking to her, but she couldn't hear the words and didn't care. She sloshed through icy waves toward the skiff. Tossing her pack into the boat, she climbed aboard and sat down on the wooden bench seat. On the shore, falling snow would soon erase all evidence of their path. It would be as if they'd never been here at all. Mama jumped aboard. Without lights to guide them, she motored slowly along the shore, gripping the wheel in gloved hands, her hair flying every which way. They rounded the bend as a new dawn glimmered and showed them the way. They pulled up to the transient dock in Homer.
"I need to say goodbye to Matthew," Lenny said.
Mama tossed Lenny a line.
"No way, we need to go, and we can't be seen today, you know that."
Lenny tied the boat down.
"It wasn't a question."
Mama reached down for her pack, hefted it up, slipped it onto her back. Taking care, Lenny stepped out of the skiff and onto the icy dock. The lines made a creaking sound. Mama turned off the engine and stepped off the boat. The two of them stood in the softly falling snow. Lenny pulled a scarf out of her pack and coiled it around her neck, covering the lower half of her face.
"No one will see me, Mama, but I'm going." "Be at the Glass Lake counter in 40 minutes,
Mama answered.
"Not 1 minute late, okay?
We're going to fly? How?
Just be there."
Lenny nodded. Honestly, she didn't care about details. All she could think about was Matthew. She hefted her backpack and took off, walking as fast as she dared on the icy dock. This early on a cold and snowy November morning, there was no one out here to see her. She reached the care facility and slowed. Here was where she needed to be careful. She couldn't let anyone see her. The glass doors whooshed open in front of her. Inside, she smelled disinfectant and something else, metallic, astringent. At the front desk, a woman was on the phone. She didn't even look up when the doors opened. Lenny slipped inside, thinking, be invisible. The corridors were quiet this early in the morning. The patient's doors were closed. At Matthew's room, she paused, steadied herself, and opened the door. His room was quiet, dark. No machines whooshed or thunked. Nothing was keeping him alive except his own huge heart. They had positioned him so that he was asleep sitting up, his head trapped in the halo thing that was attached to a vest so he couldn't move. His pink scarred face looked like it had been stitched together with a sewing machine. How could he live this way, stitched up, bolted together, unable to speak or think or touch or be touched? And how could she leave him to do it without her? She dropped her backpack to the floor, approached the bed, and reached for his hand. His skin, once rough from gutting fish and fixing farm equipment, was now as soft as a girl's. She couldn't help thinking about their school days, holding hands under the desk, passing notes back and forth, thinking the world could be theirs.
"We could have done it, Matthew. We could have gotten married and had a kid too soon and stayed in love."
She closed her eyes, imagining it, imagining them. They could have stuck it out to the gray years, been a couple of white-haired old people in out-of-date clothes sitting on a porch under the midnight sun. Could have. Useless words. Too late.
"I can't let my mom be alone, and you have your dad and your family and Alaska.
Her voice broke on that.
You don't know who I am anyway, do you?
She bent down closer. Her hand closed tightly around his. Tears landed on his cheek and caught on the raised pink scar tissue. Sam Gamgee would never leave Frodo like this. No hero would ever do this. But books were only a reflection of real life, not the thing itself. They didn't tell you about boys who broke their bodies and had their brains sheared down to the stem, who couldn't talk or move or say your name, or about mothers and daughters who made terrible, irrevocable choices, or about babies who deserved better than the messed up lives into which they were born. She put her hand on her stomach again. The life in there was as small as a frog's egg, too small to feel, and yet she swore she could hear the echo of a second heartbeat running alongside her own. All she really knew was this. She had to be a good mother to this baby, and she had to take care of her mother. Period.
I know how much you wanted kids, Lenny said quietly. And now,
you stand by the people you love. Matthew's eyes opened. One stared straight ahead. The other rolled wildly in the socket. That one staring green eye was the only part of him she recognized. He struggled, made a terrible moaning sound of pain. He opened his mouth, screamed, "Bwah!" He thrashed, bucked up like he was trying to break free. The halo made a clanging sound when it hit the bed rail. Blood started to form at the bolts in his temple. An alarm went off. Don't, she said. Please. The door opened behind her. A nurse rushed past Lenny and into the room. Lenny stumbled back, shaking, flipped her hood back up. The nurse hadn't seen her face. He was bellowing in the bed, making guttural animal sounds, thrashing. The nurse injected something in his IV. It's okay, Matthew. Calm down. Your dad will be here soon. Lenny wanted to say, I love you, one last time, out loud, for the world to hear. But she didn't dare. She needed to leave, now, before the nurse turned around. But she stood there, eyes glazed with tears, her hand still pressed to her belly. I'll try to be a good mom, and I'll tell the baby about us, about you. Lenny reached down for her pack, grabbed it, and ran. She left him there, alone with strangers. A choice she knew he would never have made about her. Her. She's here. Is she? He doesn't know what's real anymore. He has words he knows, words he's collected as important, but he doesn't know their meaning. Coma, brace, halo, brain damage. They are there, seen but not seen, like pictures in another room, glimpsed through rippled glass. Sometimes he knows who he is and where he is. Sometimes, for seconds, he knows he has been in a coma and come out of it. He knows he can't move because they strap him down. He knows he can't move his head because they've drilled screws into his skull and caged him. He knows he sits like this all day, propped up, a monster in a brace, his leg jutting out in front of him, pain constantly chewing on him. He knows that people cry when they see him. Sometimes he hears things, sees shapes, people, voices, light. He tries to catch them, concentrate, but it's all moths and bramble. Her. She's here now, isn't she? Who is she? The one he waits for. We could have done it, Matthew. Matthew. He is Matthew, right? Is her talking to him? You don't know who I am. He tries to turn, to wrench free so he can see her instead of the ceiling, which seems to roll back and forth above him. He screams for her, cries, tries to remember the words he needs, but there's nothing there to be found. Frustration rises up, makes even the pain go away. He can't move. He's a bread. No, that's not the right thing. Tied down, strapped tight, bound. Someone else now, a different voice. He feels it all slipping away. He stills, unable to remember even a minute ago. Her. What does that mean? He quits fighting, stares up at the woman in the orange outfit, listens to her soothing voice. His eyes close. His last thought is her. Don't leave. But he doesn't even know what it means. He hears footsteps, running. It's like the beating of his heart, there and then gone. 25. Falling snow turned Homer into a blurred landscape of muted colors and washed out skies. The few people out and about were either seeing the world through dirty windshields or looking up at it with tucked-in chins. No one noticed a girl in a huge parka, hood up, scarf wrapped around the lower half of her face, trudging downhill. Lenny's face hurt like hell, her nose throbbed, but none of it was the worst of her pain. At Airport Road, the snow let up a little. She turned and headed to the airfield. At the door, she paused and pulled her turtleneck up over her torn lip. The office was small and constructed of wood and corrugated metal with a sharply slanted roof. It looked like an oversized chicken coop. Behind it, she saw a small plane out on the airstrip, revving its engine. The sign for Glass Lake Aviation was missing two letters, so the sign read, Ass Lake Aviation. It had been that way for as long as Lenny could remember. The owner said he'd fixed it once, and that was plenty. Supposedly, school kids stole the letters for fun. Inside, the place looked unfinished, too. A floor made of mismatched peel-and-stick linoleum tiles, a plywood counter, a small display of brochures for tourists, a bathroom behind a broken door. A stack of boxes stood by the back door, supplies recently delivered or soon to be shipped. Mama sat in a white plastic chair with a scarf coiled around the lower half of her face and a hat covering her blonde hair. Lenny sat down beside her in a floral, overstuffed recliner that some cat had clawed to ribbons. In front of them, a Formica coffee table was littered with magazines. Lenny was tired of crying, of feeling this grief that kept opening and closing inside of her. But even so, she felt tears sting her eyes. Mama put her cigarette out in the empty Coke can on the table in front of her. Smoke sizzled up, wafted into nothingness. She leaned back, sighing. How was he? Mama asked.
The same.
Lenny leaned against her mama, needing the solid warmth of her body. She reached into her pocket and felt something sharp. The present Mr. Walker had given her from Matthew. In all that had happened, she'd forgotten about it. She pulled it out, stared down at the small, thin gift wrapped in newsprint upon which Matthew had written, Happy birthday, Lenny. Her 18th birthday had gone by almost unnoticed this year, but Matthew had been planning for it. Maybe he'd had an idea about how to celebrate it. She peeled the newsprint back, folded it carefully into something she would save. He'd touched it while thinking of her. Inside, she found a slim white box. Inside of that, a piece of yellowed, ripped-edge newsprint carefully folded. It was a newspaper article and an old black-and-white photograph of two homesteaders holding hands. They were surrounded by sled dogs, sitting in mismatched chairs in front of a tiny, mossy-roofed cabin. Junk decorated the yard. A tow-headed boy sat in the dirt. Lenny recognized the yard and the deck. These were Matthew's grandparents. Across the bottom, Matthew had written, This could be us. Lenny's eyes stung. She held the photograph to her heart and looked down at the article. My Alaska by Lily Walker, July 4th, 1972. You think you know what wild means. It's a word you've used all your life. You use it to describe an animal, your hair, an undisciplined child. In Alaska, you learn what wild really means. My husband Eckhart and I came to this place separately, which may or may not seem important, but certainly is. We had each decided on our own, and not when we were young, I might add, that civilization was not for us. It was the middle of the Great Depression. I lived in a shack with my parents and six siblings. There was never enough of anything. Not time, not money, not food, not love. What made me think of Alaska? Even now, I don't recall. I was 35 years old, on the shelf. They called us spinsters then. My youngest sister died, of a broken heart maybe, or of the despair that came with watching her own babies suffer, and I walked away. Just like that. I had $10 in my pocket and no real skills, and I headed west. Of course I went west, for the romance of it. In Seattle, I saw a sign for Alaska. They were looking for women to do laundry for men in the gold fields. I thought, I can wash clothes, and I went. It was hard work, with men catcalling all the time and my skin hardening until it was like leather. Then I met Eckhart. He was 10 years older than me, and not much to look at, if I'm being truthful. He caught my eye and told me his dream of homesteading the Kenai Peninsula. When he held out his hand, I took it. Did I love him? No, not then. Not for years, really. Although when he died, it was like God had reached in and yanked the heart out of my chest. Wild. That's how I describe it all. My love, my life, Alaska. Truthfully, it's all the same to me. Alaska doesn't attract many. Most are too tame to handle life up here. But when she gets her hooks in you, she digs deep and holds on, and you become hers. Wild. A lover of cruel beauty and splendid isolation. And God help you, you can't live anywhere else. What do you have there? Mama asked, exhaling smoke. Lenny carefully folded the article into quarters. An article by Matthew's grandma. She died a few years before we came to Alaska. The photograph of Matthew's grandparents, dated 1940, sat on her lap. How will I stop loving him, Mama? Will I forget? Mama sighed. Ah, that. Love doesn't fade or die, baby girl. People tell you it does, but it doesn't. If you love him now, you'll love him in 10 years and in 40. Differently, maybe, a faded version. But he's part of you now, and you are part of him. Lenny didn't know if that was comforting or frightening. If she felt like this forever, as if her heart were an open wound, how would she ever be happy again? But love doesn't just come once in your life either, not if you're lucky. I don't think we Albrights are lucky, Lenny said. I don't know. You found him once in the middle of nowhere. What were the chances that you'd meet him, that he'd love you, that you'd love him? I'd say lucky you. And then we fell down a crevasse, he got brain damaged, and you killed Dad to protect me. Yeah, well, the glass can be half empty or half full. Lenny knew the glass was broken. Where are we going? She asked. Do you really care? No. We're going back to Seattle. It's all I could think of. Thanks to Large Marge, we're flying and not hitchhiking. The door opened, bringing in a rush of ice-cold air. A woman in a brown parka appeared, a Cowichan toque pulled low on her forehead. Plane's ready for takeoff. Flight to Anchorage. Mama immediately pulled the scarf up to just beneath her eyes, while Lenny flipped up her parka's hood, pulled the strings so it tightened around her face. Are you our passengers? The woman said, looking down at a sheet of paper in her gloved hands. Before Mama could answer, the phone on the desk rang. The woman moved toward it, answering, Glass Lake Aviation. Mama and Lenny hurried out of the small office toward the airfield, where their airplane waited, propeller whirring. At the plane, Lenny tossed her heavy backpack into the aft area, where it fell amid boxes to be delivered somewhere, and followed her mother into the shadowy interior. She took her seat, there were only two of them behind the pilot, and tightened her seatbelt. The small plane rumbled forward, clattered hard, then lifted, swayed, leveled out. The engine sounded like the cards the kids on her old block used to put in their bicycle spokes. Lenny stared out the window, down into the gloom. From this height, everything looked charcoal gray and white,